passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
On Saturday, November 19th, Post Wrestling turns 5 years old.
This is Shane. Congrats on 5 years. I started listening to you guys before Post Wrestling off the strength of your Total Divas reviews where Way would give a play-by-play of an episode and John would just kind of react. And I'm so glad I did because you've created something really special with Post Wrestling and I'm really grateful to be a listener and to be part of this community. So congrats on 5 years. Here's to at least 100 more.
Leave your memories at memo.fm/postwrestling and join us Saturday, November 19th at QXT's nightclub in Newark, New Jersey for our 5-year anniversary show presented by our friends at Real Digital. A live Q&A, the post origin story, VIP meet and greet and event t-shirt with the largest gathering of the post community ever. Tickets available now at postwrestling.com/live. Hello, everybody, and welcome to our Crown Jewel Post Show. I am John Pollock, along with the last woman standing this weekend, with all due respect to Bianca Belair, Kate from Montreal, back for her second consecutive day here of WWE.
Well, I get to pair up with Way and then you. This is fun. I like this.
Yes, this is the incredible partners gimmick that they did on the New Japan show this morning as well. Well, here we are. It is nearly 4 o'clock Eastern in the afternoon. And this is my rule. When you have an 8-match show, 6 matches of which went no longer than 14 minutes, there is no way that this should be going nearly 4 hours. This was a very long show and we had two 20-minute matches. It was still certainly a long time ago that the show began back at noon.
I feel like it was a long time ago that the last match began. I feel like it was a long time ago that the last match ended. I was just watching Roman sort of leave. Like, I thought we were watching him walk all the way back from Riyadh.
It was, yes, quite the show in that regard, just in terms of the layout. But this seems to be sort of the pattern of these premium live events, that they are loaded with these video packages, both for like Peacock obligations, but I really felt it on this particular show because it was a show that felt like it was going along. But I would say up until that last woman standing match, like that to me was the first match that really kind of stood out for me in a notable way that I thought yeah. had a big impact on people. So we will be going through all of the matches, so you can chime in. We have also sent out a StreamYard link for our Double Double Ice Cap and Espresso patrons. So if you want to call in at the end, or you can provide your feedback up on the forum, we will be getting to those afterward. But I know you talked about it a little bit with Way off the top on Friday, but just coming into this show, Kate, we haven't done one of these Saudi Arabia shows with you in the past. Where kind of do you view these ones? Like, I certainly sense that, you know, especially when this deal began back in 2018, that there was a lot of resistance to these shows. And I think over time, I think there's still that really, that kind of balancing act that fans have to do with these shows. But it's also sort of a realization that this is a 10-year deal. These shows are what they are. It's not everyone's preference, but they have been more closely aligned that it's sort of just an acceptance of what these shows represent.
I think it's one of these things where it's like as you go on, it becomes one of those things. It's like, yeah, all right, it's something that you think about, but it's not, you know, you sort of tune it out eventually. It's there are a lot of things in the wrestling industry that people are aware of, but for instance, how easy it is for people to get very badly injured. I think it's one of those things you know it's there, but you don't want to let it ruin your enjoyment of a show then you're just going to have to force yourself to tune it out. In the case of these shows, they represent a huge portion, at least as one individual item, they represent a huge portion of WWE's income every year. And that's going to continue until the deal is up. And so, yeah, it's just going to be, it's something that we, you know, if you're a fan, you're going to have to accept. And you can either use it to sort of try to raise awareness of why these sorts of deals may be problematic, or you can ignore it, as, you know, as is your preference. I'm more of a raising awareness kind of person, but I realized that, you know, I'm also just going to be sitting here reviewing this show and talking about things that I liked and didn't like. So
absolutely.
It's pretty difficult to be morally in the clear in any context. And this is certain, being a wrestling fan is definitely one of those areas where it's going to be unclear.
Very much so. But I think it's still important to, like, not just, like, disregard those issues either when it comes to these shows. Like, I don't necessarily treat these as just any other shows. But what was more surprising to you this year? Vince McMahon getting a hero's welcome after very public sexual misconduct allegations by an audience, or MBS chants breaking out at a WWE press conference?
I hate to put this way. Neither of those things surprises me.
Well, there you go. Welcome to 2022. we will
disappoints me, maybe, but surprises don't.
A very surreal press conference on Friday that led into this. And I mean, if there is one thing I thought pretty distinct about this this show by WWE, is that the period of, like, tiptoeing around Saudi Arabia, will we even say the name of the country? I mean, this was a far removal from that, where it was front and center promoting the country. I mean, there were no reservations, and it felt like the most clear since that very first show back in 2018 during this deal.
Well, yeah, which was the one that happened, but the second one was the one that happened right after the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. So that was the point. And at that point, coming up to that show, The Undertaker was booed on TV when he said Riyadh. Like, that did not go well. And people, that was the point at which people were really struggling with the idea of WWE doing these shows. That's been sort of, that's fallen by the wayside. There hasn't been another incident like that where there was an individual targeted, like Khashoggi. And I think that has very much worked in WWE's favor. And very clearly right now, they are, they're comfortable going back to the way that the show was originally kind of presented, which was as an opportunity for the kingdom to promote itself, through a partnership with a Western sports organization.
Yeah.
It's hardly the only case where they're doing that.
No, I mean, we won't get into a sidebar here. I mean, but with the World Cup coming up in Qatar, like, there's going to be so much attention there. And you have Fox that is carrying the World Cup, and they pretty much, like, we won't be covering that aspect of things. We're there to do the soccer.
No.
Like, that's sort of.
No. This is always, and look, the World Cup is, this happens every time. There are always issues. Qatar is a particularly a difficult one. And I think it's received a lot of pushback also because just scheduling it there has caused all sorts of problems within that world. And sorry, you just said you didn't want to do a sidebar, and here I go. Anyway.
No, this is Kate's take.
I think that WWE, to a certain extent, is benefiting from the fact that focus on what's happening in the Middle East is going to be, there's going to be a lot more attention placed on Qatar than there is on Saudi Arabia because of the World Cup. And there have been a lot of problems raised with the way that they got to host the tournament, the way that some of the things that have happened in the build up to it. I invite people to look into it. So, but as a result, and it's almost like the pressure's a little bit off Saudi Arabia right now. And so WWE can just, luxuriate in this deal and in their new partnership.
Yes. This was the event they sat back and you're like, this is the one where we can present a championship belt. I think that was the signifier at the press conference. So, we'll get into the show. It opened up with a global ambassador himself, Titus O'Neil, narrating this video package and hyping up the Logan Paul and his one lucky shot that he has to land on Roman Reigns. And then what got a lot of attention from people was the opening signature to the event. Featured Naomi and Sasha Banks, and a lot of people pointing out that it appears that this was an old signature that aired. There was no Ric Flair woo in this, nor a Cody Rhodes. It seems like this was a very likelihood of a mistake rather than a nod to the audience of, hey, Naomi and Sasha Banks are coming out and we're revealing it in the opening signature. But this certainly caused a lot.
To a Saudi Arabia show, yes.
Exactly. A show that they're not booked on, yes.
Yeah, I think that this might have been a mistake. Now, look, sometimes, you know, mistakes are on purpose or mistakes are fortunate. So, you know, maybe this was a hint. Maybe it wasn't. Certainly, Sasha has gotten some attention the last couple of days for that, that Instagram story where she's hinting at big things to come in the future.
And should probably lead to a lot of speculation for the Survivor Series in Boston. Like, I think that's a show that,
oh God, yes.
Whether they try and drive you, that's naturally going to be a focal point from people to expect her, whether it's happening or not. Commentary team was Michael Cole and Wade Barrett, who was over here for the show. And we go into our opener with Brock Lesnar and Bobby Lashley, a rematch from the Royal Rumble. And this match was just your video game start, where it was Lashley hitting Lesnar with multiple spears, both on the floor and in the ring, and leading to Lesnar kicking out and his knee getting sent into the steps. So we had Lesnar having to remember to sell his knee at different points, and then others power through an F5, and he hit that, which Lashley kicked out from. Then we go into the German suplexes, and Lashley hits a spine buster, and the audience was like soundly booing Bobby Lashley at this point. He tries for the hurt lock, and Lesnar is in the hurt lock. He's screaming that he does not want to give up, telling the referee to leave him alone. And Lesnar struggles to the corner, kicks off of the turnbuckle, and just plants himself on top of Lashley for the pinfall in 6 minutes, 1 second, evening this series. And Brock Lesnar, 6 minutes of work here in Saudi Arabia. Great if you can manage it, this line of work for Brock, and gets his win with Lashley and probably a rubber match down the road.
Lesnar very rarely does long matches, and when he does, they are ones that feature, like, there are these sort of distractions. Like, they go down a different avenue where other people are interfering, or anyway. If he's going to go full on like this, it's always going to be a short match. So as soon as he saw it, I think get started. And you know that Lashley doesn't have anyone else in his corner who's going to come in to mess with things. So you pretty much knew that this was going to be a quick one.
Was this underwhelming to you? Was this sort of what you expected going in?
This was very underwhelming for me. And I'm disappointed because I'm not the biggest fan of either Lesnar or Lashley. It's just not the type of performer I like. I'm not sort of like I'm not the sort of big meaty men slapping meat fan that some people are, but I get it. There's a lot of demand for this match, and I thought that they bungled it at the Royal Rumble. And so this one to me was the make good, and they did not make good. It was a very, like, you can have a quick match that's a lot more exciting and well worked than this one. And there was action, but it never felt like it got out of first gear to me for these guys. And I guess it sets up a rubber match, but having now had two matches that I did not think came close to living up to the potential that these two have, I don't know that I'm that excited for a third match.
Like, I can't disagree. I thought the finish was really lame. You know, they started it in the way I think you would expect, but I think it's sort of become pattern now for these Lesnar matches of just the, you know, big move, big move, big move, and get people into the idea that the match can end anytime. Fair enough. But I thought the ending was very clunky. And when you couple it with some of the other finishes on this show, like, this was a show that really was in desperate need of just give me a clean finish anywhere. So this was like compounded onto matches that were still to come. But I agree with you. I thought this was very underwhelming, because the build I thought was very good on television, but the match certainly did not live up to that. And
Lesnar versus Lashley. It doesn't need, like, it doesn't, yes, the build was good, but doesn't even need that. It's a marquee match. It's one that people have really wanted, And it's one that you screwed up on what was, to me, inarguably your worst show of the year, if you're WWE. So this was, you know, this was Triple H. He had a chance to correct a mistake, and he didn't.
Yeah, afterwards, Lashley reapplied the Hurt Lock, and the story from Barrett is that Lashley kicked Lesnar's ass, and Lesnar got lucky. Awesome. I'm glad I invested so much time. The guy who lost was the true winner in all of this. So there
but
we have it.
If you get lucky, you still win. Like, that's how these things work. It's, you don't need to dominate someone to beat them. They can be smarter than you and beat you that way. And that's what happened.
That was the whole hook for the main event. It's not about talent. It's about one lucky punch. Luck is going to care.
Oh my God. If I never hear that phrase again in my life, Jesus H. Christ.
They really overdid it with the one lucky punch. That was our rematch for the women's tag team championship after the title switch on Raw. Asuka and Alexa Bliss against Dakota Kai and Io Sky. Byron Saxton interviewed Asuka and Alexa backstage as the Bray Wyatt image flickered on the screen, which threw off Alexa Bliss. So not only did Michael Cole acknowledge this, WWE tweeted out this specific clip. So in case this was too subtle for anyone, make sure you understand the Bray signal threw off Alexa. They have a history together. Did you notice that particular distraction that caused?
I didn't know anything about this until you just mentioned it.
Yes. The same company that's relying on you to find source code. They want to make sure very clearly that you saw this. This really did not play any factor in the match. Like, Alexa was thrown off or anything like this. I don't know if this is just like a misdirection for people to assume that there's something happening. But
the lights seemed to go a little wonky at one point, but that either,
which has been happening.
Maybe I had a stroke. I have no idea.
But. No, that's been something that's been pointed out, like the lights flickering of like that potentially meaning something. All four women were dressed in like the bodysuits that we had seen earlier this year. And I will say it's a much improved look than the oversized t-shirts. I will say
they have come a long way. Yes. I'm glad that they've seemingly negotiated the difference down from you can't show anything really about the female form to you can't show skin. I actually really liked the damage control sort of Power Rangers gear.
Like the suits, honestly, like I thought they looked pretty cool to be quite honest. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you had like Bayley like in uniform with Dakota and Io as well for her match as well. So I think this is a much more improved look. It doesn't look like these women are going for a sleepover somewhere. So that's, that is a step forward.
They have, their costume department has risen to the occasion. Good for them.
Asuka and Sky were tagged in. This allowed Michael Cole to once again drop his Joshi history of Triple Tails and their history together. We had Asuka and Bliss working together, sending the two to the floor. Sky hit this double underhook backbreaker to Bliss, but could not climb to the top as Bliss stopped her and hit the code red. And Asuka injures her knee in the midst, so they're kind of playing off the injury attack from Dakota and Io several weeks ago that took her off television, playing off of that. Sky then distracts Bliss as she's going for Twisted Bliss, and this allows Kai to get the knees up. Sky missed an Asai moonsault to the floor, and then Bliss hits a DDT on Kai, climbs up to the top for Twisted Bliss when Nikki Cross appears out of nowhere and hits a swinging neckbreaker to Bliss, allowing Dakota Kai to pin Alexa in 12 minutes and 51 seconds, ending the 5-day title reign of Bliss and Asuka, and it goes back to the incumbents, and that was that. So another odd finish here to this show. I thought the match was going fine, and this was a run-in finish, which was we did not get a plethora of clean finishes on this show.
It did not strike me as a match that really belonged on a pay-per-view, though. Like it struck me very much as a very good TV match. And it was good. It was like, I'm not arguing that, but it just didn't seem to have like, it didn't rise to a level of intensity that I expect from, marquee matches.
It almost felt like they probably viewed it as such and felt like the title change was necessary on Monday to give some purpose for this match that, okay, we have a title change on this show. Like that seemed the sole purpose of doing the title change on Monday.
Yeah. And I don't think that it's the best idea when you're rehabbing these women's titles to have it bouncing back and forth as much as they have. you've now had three champions in 2 months, and you've had one, like you have one set of champions who's won it twice. Like that is, I don't necessarily think, like, I don't think that you have to have someone holding on to a title for like a year, but I think that you want to have a fairly strong champion established and have feuds built around them. At this point, it very much feels like we're just treading water, waiting for Naomi and Sasha to come back. Like that is very much what the division feels like. It's just, oh, we better get the titles back on, you know, the heels have to be carrying the titles because this is what, you know, this is what's in the cards. And it just doesn't feel like they have a medium term plan for the titles. So we shall see. But yeah, I thought the match was fun. Really? I was really curious that Asuka is very over. Mm-hmm. There, and you saw it at the press conference, and you saw it tonight. Like she was the one people wanted to see, absolutely. And I would love to have a better understanding of why that is, because it kind of caught me off guard.
A lot of Kana fans, obviously.
Yeah,
probably way back. Do you see this program being the War Games match in a couple of weeks?
I think War Games. You have to. It has
like
to be
damage control on one side.
And someone. I'm not really sure who. The problem now is that I think you've been doing the damage control versus Bianca, Asuka, and Alexa for a while now. So you've kind of run through a lot of those matches, and damage control are winning on the tag side. Bianca has very clearly been winning on the singles title side. So it's a little difficult at this point. Like I kind of feel like I'm ready for another feud in the women's division, but you don't have another faction that you can turn to right away. So we'll see.
Yeah. It feels like it's, like it just feels like every Monday we're getting some iteration of this match. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you do have something unique in War Games that is a new wrinkle on it, but it certainly, I think, would help this feud to get some new players involved.
Yeah.
And that seems to be a necessity for if this is going to be the War Games match.
Well, I guess also because you already did the six woman. So like even that, like you really need something to serve as a game changer on either side, because we've already seen these teams go at it with all of them.
Well, we had the game changer that was the steel cage match that followed this. First of all, the Paul brothers appeared, arriving at the arena, and they were interviewed by Byron Saxton, where Logan said he's going to shock the world. You know why, Kate? Because it only takes one lucky punch.
The level of repetition here would make Vince McMahon cringe. It really would. Like, yeah. I don't know. At some point, I was waiting for like a punchline, because it seems so obvious and so incredibly repetitious that he's like, this has to be self-aware. But I know.
If Vince McMahon has figured out how to log into Peacock, he would have been very happy, I think, with some of the aspects of this particular
That's
show.
That's my boys.
So Cross came out with Scarlett, a pretty elaborate entrance for the two, and then out is Drew. And speaking of game changers, Wade Barrett called it a game changer when Drew caused a car accident involving Karrion Kross. I call that a crime, but game changer, crime, which whatever so, your vocabulary is.
Maybe, I don't know, like what's the game? Grand Theft Auto? Like, not
above
really
above
sure
the law, apparently, is what that means for Drew. International man of mystery here that can just skip the... get out of the country and go off to Saudi Arabia, and perhaps there's no outstanding warrant when he returns.
And hey, look, they like apparently, you know, vehicular, like attempted vehicular manslaughter is not a problem in Saudi Arabia, because Drew was way over. They liked him.
It was, I mean, for certain. I mean, it was, he was met with a hero's welcome here, as he, showed up here. He hit a, Michinoku driver and then did a, his sit up suplex off of the turnbuckle, but then Cross stopped him with a running knee and then screamed, "I'm going to hit you." And Drew was ready for this after the warning, because he stopped Karrion from hitting him by blocking Cross and throwing him into the fence. Then Cross landed the Doomsday Saito, and with Drew laid out on the floor, Scarlett yelled, "Take him down," to which Cross was like, are you watching the match? He's down. He's unconscious at this point. So it just, they were very loud, and I'm like, listen, it's like impossible to ignore them. But when I'm actually listening to what they're stating, I'm like, these are some very, odd verbal cues that are being exchanged here. So he goes for the cross jacket and then hits him with the cross hammer. I don't think he has to name everything after the cross. I think we can cool it on some of these.
Yeah, we got it. It's your name. Good for you, sweetie.
So with Cross crawling towards the door, McIntyre applies an ankle lock, crosses out, and then McIntyre lands the Claymore. I skipped over. This was Drew that was climbing towards the door first, and he was stopped with Scarlett's mace. She maced him right in the eyes, and he was at least, his vision was enough that he could land this Claymore and then find his way back. But now Scarlett has locked the door, and she has the key. So Drew then starts to climb the cage. And Scarlett is worried because she is now locked Karrion Kross inside the cage. So she frantically goes to unlock the cage door, but she is too slow because Drew quickly gets to the bottom on the floor, wins the match, and they put all the heat here on Scarlett that she made a mistake and cost Kross the match. I don't think this is what steel cage matches were intended to do, be a racing contest. But here Drew wins 13 minutes and 1 second. And then for one more statement from Drew, or sorry, from Karrion Kross, he yells on the floor, "This wasn't supposed to happen." I'm sorry. Karrion Kross is just hilarious in this match.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I'm going to hit you. This wasn't supposed to happen. And all I could take was that this feud just must continue, Kate. We will have to have some, you know, we've gone through car wrecks, international cage matches. It has to be one more fight to the death between these two.
Can it be like a cone of silence match? Like, can we just, like, no talking? No,
Karrion Kross would never enter that because he wouldn't have a prayer. It would not be possible.
Yeah. These two have anti-chemistry as far as I'm concerned. Like, whatever. I like Drew. I think he's had some good runs and very good matches in his time on the main roster. I think that I've never been totally sold on Kross, and I'm starting to feel more and more vindicated about that. But whatever it is, like, I've seen Kross be better in matches than he is with Drew. For whatever reason, these two just seem to bring out the least entertaining aspects of each other's wrestling personalities. Their matches are kind of slow and formulaic and break down into these very silly shouted exchanges. I was promised that this would be the end. I was promised. And it doesn't look like it is.
It didn't. It feels like they're going to squeeze another match out of these two. And it just seems to be, it feels like a holding pattern for Drew and for Kross. It's like, this is his first program since coming back. And I don't think he's lit the world on fire with this program. It feels like they don't want to just have him run through Drew, who's coming off that loss in Wales. And to be quite honest, like, it's a prominent enough position that I don't think Kross has, you know, beaten the door down of people demanding that this guy go any higher than this. Like, it just feels like he's come back and he's fine, but that's what this match was to me. It was fine.
But I think, I don't remember if it was you who was talking about this or Wei, but when he started at NXT, he came out and he had this awesome looking entrance and really had this like great presence. And you were immediately like, okay, this is the guy. But then it never quite, like, even though he became the champion, and then, you know, he got injured, he came back and had to win it again. But even by the time he beat Keith Lee for the championship, it sort of felt like he wasn't quite as special as he'd seemed at first. And it was much more like, okay, now is the time when we move the world title from Keith Lee onto Karrion Kross. But I find that the same thing has happened with this run since he came back, which is, you know, the way he sort of very unexpectedly came back. It was like, oh, shock. He feels like a big deal. But then he just, it hasn't happened. Like, he is sort of, you know, that star has been diminishing steadily. And now it's gone from being sort of meh to, okay, this is becoming actively bad. And I don't think, in both cases, part of the problem is that the audience just did not stay engaged with him. And that is very much an issue that they're going to have to face with him now.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Saxton interviewed Roman Reigns, who arrived with the Bloodline, and he's asked about, you know, Roman, it only takes one lucky punch. Yeah, I didn't notice until you brought it up, like how often it really was. Like it's in almost every segment here. I've got one lucky punch written here. Roman was just as tired about this as you were, Kate, because he just walked off and didn't even answer Byron. So Heyman had to cut the promo, calling Roman the greatest offensive player in the history of WWE. Not the most offensive person in the history of WWE, but the greatest offensive.
That's a much player. Tighter race.
Yeah. Roman's not in the other category. Finn Balor, Damian Priest, and Dominic Mysterio against AJ Styles, Luke Gallows, and, as identified by Michael Cole, the never open weight champion himself, Carl Anderson. So there you go. For Hikuleo fans looking, out there, there was the acknowledgement.
If you were looking for any kind of reaction to this match online, the only comment that I saw was about them mentioning New Japan. Like that was it. Like this is like that, you know, that was all. I think New Japan was trending at one point in the middle of this. Like that is what people know. That was what they grabbed onto. Please.
Yeah, it was quite the explanation by Kevin Kelly on the Osaka show this morning, as Yujiro and Hikuleo are coming out for their much anticipated singles match. And Kevin Kelly is explaining that, well, Carl Anderson is still the champion, but he got a better offer somewhere else. He's now under contract to WWE and he chose them over us. And it just made like this explanation. Oh. I was like, man, do we feel like just like the AAA league is what it felt like when he was describing this. It's like New Japan, they cannot move on from this quick enough. I don't know why they're just so fixated on the idea. Like even if you have the chance to deliver this match, I don't know why you're so adamant about doing it. It's not a big match. It just makes you look like the inferior company that is just holding your hands together, praying that WWE allows this man to come grace you with his presence. And it just, to me, it's just like, I don't know. I don't see the value in it. And it just makes New Japan to me look really silly in this whole thing, that this guy went and took a better offer.
What I keep seeing, what I've seen reposted a lot in recent weeks since this has become a thing, is that clip of Tetsu Naito talking at a press conference about why it was a bad idea for New Japan to constantly be comparing themselves to WWE, because if you were comparing yourself, you are ceding the position as the leader to them. And yeah, that absolutely relevant at this point. I think that I cringe for, I haven't seen the show from earlier today, but I cringe just picturing that, that explanation. They are making themselves look worse with every day that they let this go. They stripped Moxley of his title over a typhoon. Like this is not, that was completely out of his control. This is, you know, you look pathetic.
Well, explanation aside, I think you'll really enjoy the show. It was actually a very strong New Japan show. And spoiler, the Yujiro match, they kept exceptionally short. So I was very happy. Michael Cole, he was explaining Dominic being brainwashed by Rhea Ripley and compared it to when someone starts to date someone that the family doesn't approve of. And Barrett was very quick to push back and said, they have never stated they are dating, Michael Cole. You are making that up. It was almost like this implied relationship that has never been part of the story. And Barrett immediately like squashed that when Cole was alluding to it. The OC, they just took turns in the ring with Dominic, who is such a better heel. Like he's undersized against everyone. And the way he just begs off and stuff, I think like this heel role has really done wonders for Dominic. It just seems like a much better, better role for him to be playing. And he seems to be, you know, I'm not going to say thriving at it, but I think it's been a much better fit than maybe we would have thought when this turn initially happened. Priest comes in saving Dominic from a magic killer. Gallows was in, so we got to see him resurrect the gallows pole that he hit on Dominic. And then Ripley prevents Styles from hitting the phenomenal forearm, dropping him on the edge of the apron. And Michael Cole just screams, "Someone has to kick her ass." Michael Cole just lost it here. And Balor hits the fallen AJ with the shotgun dropkick and coup de grace. It is AJ that takes the fall in 14 minutes as the Judgment Day gets the win. And the OC, they really need to work on finding this person to combat Rhea Ripley. They've talked about it for weeks, and this would have been the time to maybe have that in place because it would have helped them out greatly here.
The only thing I'm thinking is that introducing, obviously, is going to be a woman who comes in to save them because none of them are going to hit Rhea, apparently, even though she's been like chucking them around like sandbags. So I think you're going to get a better reaction. Well, not when I say better, I mean bigger reaction from the crowd to a new woman joining the stable on TV in the United States than you would in Saudi Arabia. And so I get why they didn't do that introduction here. What I then don't get is why they had this match in Saudi Arabia. They didn't add anything to the card. It didn't advance.
Are you saying they could have given Carl the weekend off to go travel?
Ultimately,
are you saying this match was not necessary on this card? It almost seems like they just did this to create a headache.
Almost. Like they could have easily delayed this whole thing and only had Anderson debut on Monday.
Yep. 100%. Like literally the story about this was like Rhea has messed them up at every turn. And it's like, we need someone to combat Rhea. And here's the big pay-per-view match. They don't have somebody in place and Rhea costs them the match. Like I thought you guys just look foolish here. You knew what was going to happen and it happened.
Well, especially because apparently on a couple of house shows, they've had Raquel Rodriguez sort of sub in with them, which she's not the one I would have chosen. I would have gone with the Piper Niven Dewdrop, who I think, you know, I just think that she needs something a little, something new to refresh her. And I think Raquel's doing fine on her own. But so you've already teased this. It's out there. So you're putting this match on the show. It doesn't accomplish. The story is no further along than it was on Monday. And you didn't do your big reveal because this wasn't the place to do it. So you can do that on Monday. So why was I watching this? Why was I watching this sort of unexceptional match?
Well, we wanted to have another finish that has some kind of interference or distraction attached to it thus far.
Yeah, they're relying on those a little heavily now.
Then it was the true main event for everybody. Omos versus Braun Strowman. No MVP after he was taken out on SmackDown. And the two go face-to-face in the ring. And, well, it's more face-to-chest here as Omos places his hand up in the air. They have a test of strength. And then Omos pretty much takes over this match. He is throwing Strowman around. Omos, they are also relying on him just nonstop trash talk as he's beating down on Strowman. And Strowman comes back with some strikes and tries to clothesline Omos over the top. Doesn't go. Tries a second time to get him down. And then Strowman goes for the freight train and runs right into Omos, which if I had not seen just days ago, Darby Allin running into Sutnam Singh, this might have been a bit more impressive. But I just thought this times 10 on Wednesday night.
And exactly. Like and such a perfectly giveable moment. This was like
that was unbelievable. The replay of that, of just the way Sutnam Singh, like the man didn't budge off of Darby Allin.
It was like he got hit by nothing and just sort of like there's this arm movement where it's just like I've had more violent reactions to moths flying into me.
Well, Omos, as he's controlling 95% of this match, has the fatal mistake where he misses an avalanche in the corner. Strowman lifts him up and hits a power slam, beating Omos in 7 minutes and 20 seconds. In many ways, the exact same story as Lesnar and Lashley, where one guy kicked the other guy's ass for 95% of the match, but then made one mistake and it was a loss, costing them the match. I'll say this, like, this was above what I was anticipating, which was dreadful. At the same time, I don't think anybody is looking out for this kind of a match in 2022. I just think tastes are so much elevated at this point with the average wrestling that is out there that I don't know if this is going to stand out to anybody unless there's still a novelty with size, which there may be for some, but this to me was the worst.
There did seem to be a lot of reaction to the big guys from the audience in Saudi Arabia. So maybe the tastes there are a bit different. Maybe they still get into a lot of these. You know, they hadn't hosted a lot of shows, so they haven't seen big guy matches in person the way that North American audiences have. Yeah, this did nothing for me.
Do you see a future for Omos? Like, do you see a role for him, long-term of what you do? Like, this was kind of, his first big singles loss. And I don't think this is by any means the end of Omos, but it does bring up, like, you brought back a Strowman. He's now beaten your existing monster. And, like, where does that leave an Omos? Like, what kind of role is he filling on the shows?
Yeah, I don't know if Omos has really ever moved beyond the sort of bodyguard position. Like, I don't know if he has ever gotten good enough to be more than what he was when he started on the main roster as AJ Styles' muscle. So I don't think that he has the versatility or the depth of moveset to be really entertaining to audiences for a longer period of time. I think that Strowman, audiences like Strowman. He's the big guy that they like. And yes, Omos is bigger, but I don't think that matters a whole lot. And I just, I don't see him working as a good standalone character the way that he currently is.
Yeah. I think that, this love in with size, I think it's so much from a bygone era where it was, you would go in person to these live events and you were being, promoted by people that were, seeing these individuals in person. And I'm sure you go and see Omos in person. I'm sure he is a breathtaking figure in person. But to the average consumer, I don't think size translates anywhere near the perception of what it does. And I think Omos gets, a lot of passes just because of this size. And to me, in this modern landscape, I just think that's a really tough role to be in unless you are really, really special and have a level of charisma and personality that complements your size. But if it is just the size, that's a lot to be able to hang your hat on. And Braun is a much more versatile performer than Omos. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be what this program comes out of with Braun.
This whole thing felt very Vincey to me.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Not Usy Vincey. That's right. The Usos against Ridge Holland and Butch, the Ridge the Fridge, as they, once again, Michael Cole comparing him to a fridge. So really trying, working overtime to get that one over. Jay comes out and his arm and wrist are all taped up, and they explain that he is working with a wrist injury sustained on the recent European tour, and he's going to need an MRI on Monday. And this clearly sounds like a legitimate injury, and they do have the tag title match scheduled for Friday, but work the match. It didn't seem as though he was all that limited in the match, but yeah, hopefully this is not too serious.
He kept using that arm, though. Like, he kept hitting people with that arm. So
yeah,
I don't want to see him re-injure it or anything, but it's protected enough that he felt comfortable doing strikes with the injury.
Yeah, and got involved in the main event. Like, I'm pretty sure, like, if it was severe, they would have greatly limited him on this show. But it's, he's in such an important story right now. I'm sure the last thing he wants is any time off. So anyway, the match proceeded. probably the most popular person in this match was thousands of miles away, and that was Sami Zayn, who got a chance not just at the press conference, but then during the match itself as they were chanting, "We want Sami," which I don't think was coming from the government, but rather the fan base inside.
No, that was just awkward for everyone concerned.
It was, and then Jay yells.
Good for them, well, though.
Yeah, and then Jay yells, "Well, you're not getting him." So there you go. Holland gets a hot tag. It's like Ridge Holland is not the most dynamic performer in the world, but he has improved a lot just working, nightly with Sheamus and with Butch. He's got his role here. I thought, he was trying to get the audience engaged during his hot tag. Like he has made significant inroads, I think, through this pairing with the Brutes and such. They take Jimmy and they stomp his elbow onto the stairs as a receipt for what they did to Sheamus as well. Jimmy goes for the Uso splash. Butch catches him with the triangle and is twisting the fingers. But then Jay comes in, super kicks Butch, breaking up the submission. There's a double Uso splash that Holland saves. And then the brawling Brutes hit the Northern Grit with Butch's kick. Again, Jimmy makes the save, and it's Butch who gets stopped on the turnbuckle by a super kick, and they send him off the turnbuckle into the 1D as the Usos retain the tag titles in 10 minutes and 49 seconds. A clean finish, nice-looking 1D. I'll take it, Kate. This was a pretty nice, satisfactory match. Yep. Like a higher-end, like, SmackDown-level tag match, I would say.
I think... reflecting on it now, yes, I think it was a good match. They performed well. When I was watching it at the time, I did not enjoy it, but I realized that I did this to myself. I was expecting that to be a very good match, and it didn't hit the level that I wanted it to, and it didn't hit the level that I think these teams are capable of. That's on me. They did just fine. They did good. It was I liked the end spot. I think that really added something, sort of upped the intensity level. So, yeah.
I feel this, and perhaps they were somewhat limited with whatever Jay is dealing with.
Yeah.
I also think this would have been a pretty hot opener as well, like just put into that spot as well. But it was at this point, I was like watching this show, and it was like nothing had really grabbed me at this point. And I wouldn't say this was far from like match of the show, but it was it was above some of the other stuff that I found to be rather underwhelming.
I think even last night I was saying I expected this to be the match of the show. So in the moment, I was not thinking as highly of it. I think even having had a couple of hours to digest, it was a good match.
Well, a couple of hours is what the rest of the show was, because we got a lot of time allocated to the final two matches of the show. Last woman standing match for the Raw Women's Championship, Bianca Belair defending against Bayley, and they got multiple weapons involved right from the get-go, including a ladder and chairs. Later, there would be a table that was not going to compromise at all. Bayley took the metal portion of the barricade, swinging it into Bayley's head. They were working very hard here from the onset. And then Belair tried to escape and gets she's placed underneath the steps. So she's trapped under the steps, and then Bayley places a ladder over top of the steps. So she's trying to trap her so that the 10 count could be administered. So she's got to fight out and then overcome kendo stick shots from Bayley. Then they fought up the apron where Bayley to belly was hit, and they didn't go too over reliant on the counts and kind of save them for the end where they could maximize the drama. But then Bayley disappears backstage and returns in a golf cart. And my first rule on this show was that an 8-match show should not go 3 hours and 40 minutes. My second rule is that when you're using a golf cart and the target is not Sammy Guevara, not going to work.
It's an unfortunate thing, but as soon as you see golf cart, that's the spot that everyone's going to think of. And they weren't going to recreate that. Quite honestly, we shouldn't try.
No. Listen, Bayley was the most cautious driver you have ever seen. I could make a reference here that this was our most progressive spot on the show, that we did have a female driver. So that's good. It does reflect the laws in the country. So Bayley so cautiously drives this cart, and Belair was getting out of her way. She's like, I am not taking any chances here of anything going awry here, and got out of the way. And then,
oh, Sammy posted some photos at one point of the bruises he got from that first time he took that, and it wasn't nice. I'm pretty sure Bianca was like, yeah, no, thank you. No.
So
I've already traveled 13 hours to, to get here. I'm not sitting on a 13-hour flight going back with those kind of bruises.
Then they fought onto the roof of the golf cart, and Bailey is on this roof, and Belair starts driving down the ramp. And I'm thinking, what's she going to do? Is she going to slam on the brakes and send her flying? Thankfully,
I
was like, what is the end goal here? And she cautiously brakes at the bottom. Bailey is on top, and then she yanks Bailey off the roof so that she can go through the table. This table does not break. I was like, oh God. And then
I always feel worse when it does, when it doesn't break. It's like, you know, that hurts more.
And I'm thinking, oh, is this the most awkward spot of the match? No, it was seconds later when Michael Cole, made reference to this being the LIV golf tour. It's like, do we really need to just inject this? Let's just move into that.
You're not the only ones involved in sports washing here.
So Belair then power bombs Bailey through the table. Bailey gets up at the count of nine, and then Belair misses a 450 splash, crashing onto a series of chairs. And the end comes. Belair tries for a rose plant onto the chair. It's stopped, and Belair lifts her up, delivers a KOD, dropping Bailey's knee onto the chair, which Cole immediately ties into her injury, which I thought was a really cool spot.
Yep.
And then trapped her in between the ladder in the corner. Bailey could not escape this ladder and was counted out at 10 in 20 minutes and 27 seconds. And I thought this was the best match on the show. I thought that they were
absolutely
really, really hard. You know, this was a crowd that, I mean, they were not like blowing the roof off of this place throughout this show. It was, you know, sometimes the atmosphere was like up and down, but I just thought this match was really laid out very, very well. And yeah, it was my match of the show.
Yeah, mine too. And I think that I wasn't a big fan of the ladder match that they had at Extreme Rules. I was a big fan of their match last year at Hell in a Cell. And I thought that this was much closer to that first one. I really liked the ending. I thought that spot at the end was so clever. It's like, oh, hey, right. Like she can't get out. It's stuck. Oh, that's creative. And, even the way that Bailey kind of sold it, where she was trying to get out at first as the count's going on, she realizes, and then it occurred to her, she could try to slide out to the side, but it occurred to her too late. She couldn't get out in time. And I thought that it was just very well worked. I did think that they missed an opportunity though when Bianca was sort of stuck in the stairs. First of all, I didn't get why the ladder was going to hold her in to begin with. I thought if she had just crawled from under the stairs, under the ring, and actually just sort of popped up in another place, I thought would have given you a great visual. Like as the ref is administering the count, if she just sort of stood up behind him, I thought, missed a very gif-able moment there.
Maybe she thought she was just going to erupt from underneath these steps and stand up and then smash her head into the ladder and be knocked out. Maybe that was the thinking for Bailey. She was playing chess in this game of checkers.
Yes, exactly. Crowd actually seemed much more on Bailey's side on this one, which was interesting to me. But I guess Bailey's still the more known quantity. But didn't like the crowd wasn't as engaged in this match. I guess given the way the show had been to that date, it's just to that time, it was possible that they were just like, okay, we were expecting something a little more, perhaps.
I thought they performed really well. Like, this is a tough spot where it's like, you're getting a pretty lengthy main event coming up as well. They were second from the top, but this was a very, very strong
glad to see
match.
that they got positions there too.
A lot of time warranted towards the match and deserved it. Like they had me engaged throughout the whole thing.
Absolutely.
So at that point, I'm looking at the clock. I'm like, okay, we're definitely not starting at three, and I'm ready for this main event. And then this to me was my turning point, because Bray Wyatt's music hit and my reaction was, oh, Bray Wyatt.
Me too. That's exactly what I did. I was just like, oh shit, man. I thought we were back
to 2020. I was like, oh, Bray Wyatt. He came out and he talks about his prestigious wrestling family that he comes from, that he wanted to be great since he was a child, but he couldn't just be great. He had to be greater than all of them. And this crowd, they loved Bray Wyatt. I mean, they're chanting, yes, you are. We love you. I mean, this crowd just loved
him. He was trying to do the self-loathing and sort of self-pitying thing, and they just were not having it.
None. Like, they were going to be his pick-me-up here. He made a monster of himself and wore that mask with pride. He would no longer feel pain while wearing it or be afraid. He was untouchable, but this monster destroyed him and it ran off
everyone. He was untouchable in the mask, something which he is saying unironically in the city where he was pinned by Goldberg.
Yes. Well, the mask, it didn't have international powers, Kate. So that was, let's not let history dictate where we're going in the future. Wyatt said people love the idea of him, but they don't actually love him. This audience contradicted that, and we got our first We Love You chant. And this is not the end of his story. He is here to rewrite the ending of his story. And with that, Uncle Howdy appears on the screen and asks, why wear a mask? You can't fool him. And Uncle Howdy asks if the people will still love Bray if they knew the truth about him. And if this secret has anything on par with The Miz and Johnny Gargano and Dexter Lumis's hidden secret, I don't know if we're ready for this secret to be revealed. He said, if you're afraid of the aftermath, you never have to take off the mask. Tell me I'm wrong. And thus concluded probably the longest trip for an individual to go to another country to redo a segment from SmackDown a week ago is what this felt like to me. I didn't know if we got much progress here, but this was the Bray Wyatt portion of the show that they obviously felt Bray Wyatt. We wanted to have some representation of him on this card.
Well, and clearly, look, the crowd wanted it. The crowd was really into this.
Him. Yeah,
like so. This was done for the live audience. Given the length of the show, I wonder if maybe this is something they could have done just for the live audience and maybe done as a web exclusive, because this did, like, the show was feeling long at this point. And yes, we just had a really good match, but to that point, it was the only really good match as far as I was concerned. So then thinking, okay, one more match, we're done. And then having this kind of, it did throw the pacing off again. So I absolutely understand the decision. It's the correct decision to have him go there to appear before the audience because they really wanted it and they loved it. But I don't know if it was necessary to include it in the body of the show proper.
Mm-hmm. And it was interesting to look at sort of the, you know, who was on this show, because it's not like this was a all hands on deck show, like no Ronda, no Seth, no Riddle, like some of their like big current stars on top of, you know, you have a lot of injuries out there, but you know, Bray is the hot star, and I see like the reason, even if there wasn't a whole lot of, you know, storyline progression for this, but more so just sort of a lateral stuff with the Uncle Howdy character. But now it was really time for the main event, Roman Reigns taking on Logan Paul. And Reigns comes out with Heyman, Logan Paul out by himself, because we would be having the come on down moments later towards the end of this. Logan Paul, early on, he's utilizing some of his wrestling skill, including a standing switch and then a fireman's carry. And Michael Cole noting that sources close to Roman Reigns' camp believe that Roman is not taking this seriously enough and no one can get through to him. So we will see if that's a story that is explored later. Who is the leak inside of the bloodline that is fueling Michael Cole with this speculation? So Paul then clotheslines Reigns to the floor, and you can see here that Reigns is starting to get frustrated and starting to take Paul a bit more seriously. And then Logan Paul introduces his buckshot lariat. What did you think about the form here as Logan Paul borrowed?
Well below Hangman, well higher than Punk.
some extremes there. Paul followed with a big springboard, and he gets nailed by a right hand from Reigns in midair. And Reigns just like shuts him down at this point. He takes over, and Paul lands a gut wrench and then hits his own Superman punch, but he can't climb on top for the cover. Instead, he does the kip up, a la Shawn Michaels, that they were noting helped train him for this. I thought it was weird to kind of do this spot so early, the Superman punch, because like this was the whole story of the match, was if he lands this, and they were going to do a bigger spot with the Superman punch later.
Well, and the thing is, I guess credit to him, he hit it really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
that punch looked devastating, and you didn't expect, like, yeah, you expected that to be a bigger moment, because I remember it happened. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Are we already getting towards the end? So, credit to him. Thought it looked great, but yeah, like, I guess I didn't, it surprised me that they did it with that much of the match left.
Yeah. To me, it was like the way you had built this up. It's like, once you do the big punch, like, that's got to be, to me, like the big near fall. So anyway, he does execute a standing moonsault. Reigns kicks out, then signals for sweet chin music. And, it did not look like this was going to be, a sweet chin music based on his delivery method, but he was caught and hit with a rock bottom by Reigns. And then Reigns misses with the Superman punch. And it's Paul that lands the right hand that drops Reigns, and he follows with a big Superman punch. And this leads to the big near fall. And this was pretty much what the whole match was built towards, was this one mm-hmm. big near fall. And then Reigns is placed onto the announcer's desk by Paul. Paul goes up to his entourage, who got front row tickets here in Saudi Arabia, and takes the phone from one of his pals, yells, "You're going viral," which, interestingly enough, was the original finish for Hogan Andre at WrestleMania, but it got nixed at the last minute. Andre really wanted to have that moment. So Logan Paul climbs to the top turnbuckle and hits a frog splash while holding the phone. I mean, just mm-hmm. total gimmick infringement here on Austin Theory, who was nowhere to be seen in this whole match.
Yeah, that was a funny thing. It's like, they do have a guy who does this, but of course, Logan Paul, it's much more his thing, and sort of recreating that big spot from his SummerSlam match where he did the tape, like the dive to the announcer's table. I'm very sure that this will go viral. I'm sure that this will be one of their
who will get ownership of the year. Who will be the ones to get to post this on their YouTube? Will Logan Paul get it on his YouTube channel, or will WWE get this clip on their channel?
I gotta think that WWE is going to insist on this one. You know what, though? I'll bet they both put it up. I'll bet that they want to get to maximize your impressions. I'll bet that they're just going to say, you know, split in half. We both get to put it up.
Maybe
it's just a race to see who gets it there first.
Maybe they'll split TikTok and some other social ones, and then Twitter can go right down the middle.
Sort of, yes.
The Usos
lining up like Europe pre-World War I.
Exactly. The Usos appear, and they go after Paul's entourage, super kicking both of these guys who are never really identified by name. I don't need any Logan Paul fans to inform me who these guys are. And this leads to Jake Paul, who gets his own entrance and music, comes out. And this was the classic, Kate, of like someone who's an actual like fighter having to do worked punches. These punches looked awful. And
oh my God.
They look terrible. I mean, it's like, you think naturally it's like, oh, a striker is going to have a tremendous looking punch. It's like when you have a legitimate striker that then has to throw mm-hmm. a work punch and they've never done it before, this is what you got. And
they poor Jimmy.
Yeah, exactly. And Jimmy and Jay, I mean, credit to them. They sold this like they were hit with two lucky punches. They were out.
No, it reminds me actually that, yeah, like something Kurt Angle said about Ronda Rousey, where it's just the toughest thing for her to learn was to, like, how to hit people and not hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's, you know, you've trained your whole life to do it the other way around. This, yeah, that these punches, my grandmother throws harder punches and she's dead.
Look, man, Kate, just poor Jake Paul here taking it.
Hey, I don't want to take an actual punch from the guy, believe me, but this was not a strong one of these.
I'm sure you could you would be okay. Logan hits another frog splash, Reigns kicks out, and then Solo Sikoa comes out. He gets his own entrance, and it mm-hmm. leads to Logan hitting a big dive onto the Usos, and then slides into the ring right into a Superman punch, followed by the spear.
A lucky Superman punch,
you're right. And Roman pins him in 24 minutes and 49 seconds, retaining the Universal Championship. And I've got to say this was not my match of the show, but I thought this was like another really solid outing for Logan Paul. He's a tremendous athlete. They structured this around several near falls. The audience was really into it. A lot of run-ins, but you know what? For a match like this, it's like, I expect smoke and mirrors and stuff like that.
Yeah, it was always going to be a spectacle match at a spectacle show.
It enhanced the match for me. So I've got to say, like, I was pretty disappointed with this show, but the last two matches I thought were for what they were. And that was pretty much the last hour or so of the show were the strongest of the whole show.
It was my second favorite match on the show.
Me too.
Like the women's title was absolute, like, far and away, I thought, the best one. This one was good. I think that Logan Paul has an excellent sense. Like, he's a very, very good athlete, but he also just has an excellent sense of showmanship. And that is one of the reasons why he's going to thrive in this environment. And I think that there was what I would say was a clear tease that we're going to get either the Usos or Solo Sikoa and a partner against the Paul brothers at some point.
It certainly felt like this was not a one-off with Jake. I mean, having the entrance and the video, and I just think, like, someone like Jake Paul, you're out there in front of this crowd. I mean, you know, we have seen some of the reports of, like, how his pay-per-view did last week. It's like, I certainly see him, at the very least, WWE trying to help his star power. Like, I think people have a very inflated sense of how big Jake Paul means on some of these boxing fights that I think Logan probably sensed the same. Like, I think it helps these guys being associated with WWE as opposed to, you know, the Pauls adding all of this outside attention to WWE. I think it's, you know, they're the benefactors.
It's
here.
A two-way street. Yeah.
So there you go. That was Crown Jewel. I'm going to go thumbs in the middle on this show, and it's pretty much off the last two matches, which were a sizable portion of this show. The rest of this, it just felt like a very inconsequential show. A lot of programs that didn't feel like they wrapped up. It was just a pause to get to the next match between them. A lot of non-clean finishes that just kind of wore on for me during this undercard. But the last woman standing match, I thought, was very, very strong.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because originally people would get, you know, regardless of the social and political issues associated with doing shows in Saudi Arabia, people seemed to get very frustrated that these shows were just, they were kind of stuck in there and they didn't really do anything. And you had to you had to sort of quickly build up all of these matches that didn't feed into any storylines, that it was just kind of off on its own, but you had to make them feel like a big deal. And then in some of the more recent shows, they have actually been integrating these shows into stories, and that it has respected the character arcs and the storylines that they have going on TV and through other pay-per-views. This one felt like a step back in that regard because it just felt like there was nothing that was advanced here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You did have the, as I said, the spectacle match, the sort of just between Roman and Logan Paul, where it was just, we're going to do this. It's just for Saudi Arabia. We'll get back to your regularly scheduled programming after we're done this, but this is just an insert. So you can kind of get over that, but Bianca versus Bayley, in storyline terms, it felt like that feud was done. I really liked the match. I thought it was very, very good. And I'm not upset that we got it, but storyline wise, it did just feel like we're sort of tacking something on to a feud that had already culminated. And with the other matches, it had that same thing where just you weren't moving anything forward. And I guess you did have, through some trickery, you had the title change for the women's tag titles, but that's it.
Yeah. In some ways, it felt like one of those old Saturday night's main events where you've gone to all the different cities with the feuds, and then you put on Saturday night's main event at the end when, you know, you've exhausted it and gone and toured the match around everywhere. It certainly had that feel to it. And you're right with the Bayley Belair, like the ladder match was really built up as kind of the last chapter there, and they extended it. It was a great match, but you're right. It was, you sort of felt like we've hit the finality with this program, and we probably haven't, because with this War Games, they certainly need to, I think, you know, get some more people involved, because I think as much as the matches are enjoyable, it just feels like wash, rinse, repeat every Monday that we've got the combination so many times over and over.
They haven't, on the whole, been enjoyable enough to make me want to keep seeing them week after week. And the Bayley Bianca match tonight is the strongest I think that any of these pairings has produced. But just on the whole, like, okay, I think we've had since SummerSlam, we've been going through this, and it hasn't really, you know, it has run it. It feels like it's run its course now. And unfortunately, now you're looking at an event where you have to do some teams.
Want to give a shout out to Rico Suarez becoming a member at video.postwrestling.com. Welcome aboard, Rico, if that is in fact your real name. We have one piece of feedback here from Kayvon from Glasgow, Scotland. While I still can't bring myself to watch the Saudi shows, I did catch the highlights on Twitter, and it's great to see how far the women's division has come. From not being featured on the first three cards to tonight's extremely fun and vicious-looking plunder match, plus the first women's title change in the kingdom with Io and Dakota. I'd still rather they weren't there, but given they are, I'm glad they've continued to push for more inclusion. On Rewind to SmackDown, both Kate and Wei seemed convinced that the Usos' New Day next week was a foregone conclusion. Could you guys see New Day picking up the win, Jay taking the blame, and a title shot for Jimmy and Sammy? That could also open the door for one more match with Jay and Roman during this run, which I'd love to see. Shout out to Kate, always a very welcome addition to the shows, which I will second.
Thank you so much.
Any probability of a title change on Friday?
I don't see it. I think
not with the New Day.
The New Day feel very cold right now, and the Usos, I like the idea that you could play with expectation, but just the New Day are in a position where the audience is going to accept them as a bigger deal than the Usos. And you want your titles to be on the people who feel like they are going to have the greatest impact. So I think that this is something which is geared towards, having them break that record. It's a little unfortunate that it does seem to just, again, that it is a foregone conclusion, because you'd like there to be some suspense, but that's not what we're getting.
Any prediction? What would you like to see from the men's side of things in the War Games match at Survivor Series, as they're going to have to start the build pretty quick? That show is in 3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that the nice thing about the War Games format is that it's an exciting format on its own. If you just give me some good names, like, that's it, I'm in. I don't like, it's going to be, like, I don't need you to hit me over the head with a lot of things coming up. I want a decent build, but it's one of those ones that it's like the match itself is going to is just worth tuning in for. I assume that we're going to get a bloodline thing. I'm kind of assuming that it's going to be the bloodline sans Roman. Like, I don't know if I see them putting Roman in a sort of a group match like that.
I'm just looking here. He is advertised on the event page for Survivor Series. So possible, but you know, as I noted, like, I think the bloodline thing is strong enough that if Roman was not in that match, I don't think it hurts it. I think you've got enough dynamics with the other bloodline members. But, you know, if Roman's on the match, like, that makes sense too.
It does. I think that the whole the crux of that match is going to be about the role that Sami Zayn plays in it. And in a way, having Roman involved in the team might actually be a bit of a distraction, because I think that this is going to be what sort of pivots the story towards, like, Sammy and the bloodline eventually sort of, you know, that becoming more of a conflict, however you want to sort of frame it. I also think that if you're going to move towards, like, Sammy falling out with the bloodline, then it probably means they have to lose, and I don't know if they want to have Roman on a team that loses.
Yeah, to me, the value of the bloodline losing is Roman not being in the match, and how does Roman react after sending them into War Games to represent the tribal chief. So we'll probably have those matches put together fairly quickly with the short turnaround. But that is going to bring a close to our Crown Jewel post show. So, Kate, I want to thank you very much for doing
this. Thank you so much for having me. This is fun.
It was great to have you
on the post show, I mean.
On for this show and for Friday night. If people have not caught it as well, patrons can go at postwrestlingcafe.com and check out 2 hours of Kate and Wei reviewing SmackDown and a very unique episode of Rampage featuring Katsuyori Shibata taking on Orange Cassidy with a very concentrated and researched Mike Tyson, who was ready. I felt the man was auditioning for future work.
Yeah, I did not expect that.
All right. Well,
I didn't expect any of that.
I would certainly recommend for people if they've not seen the New Japan show, and I won't give out any results. Main event is a must see. I'll put that on your homework list, Kate. This weekend is the Nick Gage Invitational on your menu.
Yes, I am probably going to check that out. I've got one of these things where it's like, oh my God, I got a whole lot to catch up on because I do want to watch New Japan. But yeah, I will probably also be checking out some GCW.
And this is with the new, the whole new Fight Plus deal that goes into effect with this show on Sunday.
Yeah, you know what? It's really embarrassing. I haven't actually checked out all of the like how that works up here. Yeah, so we'll see. That's a good. It seems a very good deal for them. I'm trying to work out how it's going to make money, but it seems like they're running pay-per-views at 20, 30 bucks a pop every 2 weeks. This is.
Look at that. The great Jay Hunter from OSW. Great stream, guys. Very easy and enjoyable listen. Could we have a greater compliment than our favorite Jay? Check out all. OSW, by the way, they just did a show on All Out, including the post press conference chaos
and the real main event.
Some fantastic stuff from the crew over there. All right. We are going to sign off. This day has gone a lot longer than I expected. It started at 7 a.m. watching New Japan, and now it is 5 p.m. Eastern time. So I'm off the clock tonight. Kate, thank you so much. Do follow her on Twitter. She keeps up on everything, and she will let you know her takes because she is the one and only Kate, and you will be hearing her voice aplenty here on the Post Wrestling Network if we're so lucky to have you coming back, Kate.
Oh, I think anytime you want me. Anytime you want me.
That is it. And Monday night, Way is back with myself. We will partner up once again on Monday night for Rewind or Raw as we come off Saudi Arabia and look towards Survivor Series. So thanks to everyone for joining us in the live chat. And that is it for us. Thank you for tuning in to our Crown Jewel post show. On Saturday, November 19th, Post Wrestling turns 5 years old.
Congratulations to John and Wei Ting on 5 year anniversary of Post Wrestling. It's been a great 5 years, long-time listener, and from podcasts to merchandises, we've all enjoyed what you offer to the wrestling community, and looking forward to what the future has for Post Wrestling. Keep up the great work.
Leave your memories at memo.fm/postwrestling and join us Saturday, November 19th at QXT's Nightclub in Newark, New Jersey for our 5-year anniversary show, presented by our friends at Real Digital. A live Q&A, the post-origin story, VIP meet-and-greet and event t-shirt with the largest gathering of the post community ever. Tickets available now at postwrestling.com/live.